So our busy service did not include announcements earlier. I don't know whether any of you missed them in particular. But lest we leave without any, I have two short things to remind us. We're looking for a couple extra greeters for the Christmas Eve service. It's actually a lot of fun. Come at 4:30, say hello to everybody who arrives. But if that's something you're able to do, please see Susan Karen, who will raise her hand in the back of the church here, high and mighty. And after the service today, the film Unmasking the Domination Code of the Doctrine of Discovery at noon in the parlor. This one-hour film tells a compelling story of historical truth, spirituality, and resistance on behalf of original nations and indigenous peoples that bear the scars of this ancient doctrine even today. Allison and Andrea plan to have a short discussion afterwards for those who can stay, and certainly in light of all that's going on in our country right now, particularly in North Dakota, this understanding this part of our history better bears the gift of our time. So years ago, around this time of year, this season, I was telling the Jesus Nativity story and decided to do it from Mary's perspective. This story, this Jesus Nativity, is so familiar to most of us. So every now and then when we're telling it again year after year, we try to come up with some new way to offer it. A friend of mine told me one year he shared the story from the perspective of the donkey. Not sure how that would have gone, but anyway. At any rate, my hope, telling it from Mary's perspective, was to make the story feel real for people, to show that there was a real woman, a human woman, who had a real child. We don't really know all the details of the angels and the cows and the wise folk, but accepting that a man named Jesus lived, and there's not universal acceptance, but often a general sense that this is true, we can be pretty sure that somebody gave birth to him. So I want to be clear, I wasn't making fun of the event. I wanted people to be reminded of the mystery that is inherent in how we each come into this world, how we are each born from the body of another, and of the miracle of our lives that is still in front of us. So, and this is how we learn in church work. I put a pillow under an apron and I turned sideways, kind of touching my tummy the way I remember doing when I was pregnant. And then I talked about new birth and what it represents and what Mary may have imagined or possibly couldn't have imagined about what was about to unfold in her life, what none of us can really imagine, try as we might, when a new being comes into the world. So then after the service, I was approached by a woman who was really unhappy about the way I represented Mary. She was incensed that I would presume so cavalierly a story so sacred. And she mentioned in front of a room full of people that she had brought friends to the service who happened to be Catholic, and she imagined that they were particularly offended. I felt badly to have upset her so much, and I hoped I had not offended her friends. It was certainly not my intention. And I felt and continue to feel especially sad because the vehicle of my message prevented her from hearing it. I am constantly in awe of the miracle of life, of all life, of the way we and all things are created, of the very biology of it all. The mere fact of our existing, Lewis Thomas reminds us, in the lives of a cell, would keep us all in a contented dazzlement of surprise. The odds are so great against it. So it's no wonder that we have birth stories to remind us of the things that we lose sight of. Hope and possibility, goodness and right relations, Several weeks ago, we had baby Reese up here being dedicated. How much of a miracle is that life? How much possibility is bundled into his new life right here among us? This morning's stories are an amazing overlap of miracles and messages from different traditions, three different traditions of angels and unicorns and magical things that herald new beginnings. Who knows what traveling message from one continent and era to another might have inspired their similarities? Or perhaps it is simply our human imagination that calls us to similar approaches. These stories are, as the author Philip Pullman reminded us, the once-upon-a-time messages that reach the heart, that reach our hearts, that resonate for us on an emotional level when we let them, that help us believe there is goodness in the world and compassion and care. Pullman, who some of you may know, wrote The Golden Compass and what he calls the Darkness Materials Trilogy, describes himself as an atheist, but a Church of England atheist, which means he is filled with the rituals and the music and the imagination that inhabited his high church childhood. Thou shalt not, he tells us, might reach the head, but it takes once upon a time to reach the heart. He is, after all, a storyteller. This morning, for us, the stories we shared are centered around the idea of something so small and vulnerable, and the idea that something once upon a time survived to change the world. And the stories themselves encourage us to understand each exceptional life was foretold. The irony is that the foretelling doesn't get created until after the fact of the impact, right? The mythology of the Buddha or Confucius or Jesus did not make its way to us until after their lives were experienced. But in our human desire to continue the messages of hope, of compassion, of right living, we create stories to remind ourselves of the best that we humans have to offer. Our inboxes are overwhelmed these days, are they not? By messages about our current political environment. I know I mentioned right after the election that many in this country are hope-filled given the results. Still, many of us have concerns, that might be putting it mildly, based on especially conservative and divisive social rhetoric, among other things. In a recent post, I found a message from philosopher and political activist Cornel West, who said, "For us in these times, to even have hope is too abstract, too detached, too spectatorial." There's a word. "Instead, we must be a hope, a participant, and a force for good as we face this catastrophe." When I read this, I thought, hurry up, get the baby, get the baby. "For us in these times, we must be a hope, a participant, and a force for good." I wonder which of these three stories might have resonated best for each of you. We may be vaguely familiar with the teachings of Confucius. Certainly the influence of the Buddha's teachings have been felt more widely in the West for the past several decades. But we are undoubtedly most familiar in this country with the Jesus narrative. I worry sometimes that our Unitarian Universalist penchant for intellectual rigor and inspiration of the mind has inclined us to pay less attention to what that story in its familiarity has to offer our hearts. And again, as I did years ago telling the story of Mary, I feel sad to imagine that the vehicle of the message prevents us from hearing it. That we have so sullied the story with commercialism and hoopla that we no longer hear the herald of the season. I worry that we have become unreceptive. Remember, our theme this month is about receptivity. I worry that we have become unreceptive to the beauty of this season's story of hope in a new beginning. We sometimes feel jaded, sometimes wringing our hands in confusion. So then, how is it we might know how to be a hope, a force for good, in a world that we know more than ever needs it to be so? The only way I know to fight despair is to find the kernels of goodness and be them, so that there might be more of it in this world, more goodness, more hope, more light than the alternative. Oh, an angel came, thank goodness, I was hoping. We've been waiting. We are in need of angels to remind us how to rise up singing. It's so easy to find fault these days with the intentions and actions of others. I am reminded of the gospel's warning to us against judgment. Why do you look at the splinter in your brother's eye and not consider the plank in your own? Remember that one? We're all flawed, right? Sometimes we all have trouble spelling. Might have to Google that. And yet we feel deeply that something is not right right now. Something is truly off base. It feels more like more than the average swing of the pendulum from left to right in our world. We feel worry and fear in our bellies for what is in front of us. My Sunday morning Advent post this morning included the following reminder. All the great spiritual leaders in history were people of hope. Abraham, Moses, Ruth, Mary, Jesus, Rumi, Gandhi, and Dorothy Day all lived with a promise in their hearts that guided them toward the future without the need to know exactly what it would look like. Henry Nouwen's words from the book Bread for the Journey, let's live, he says, with hope. Our challenge from Cornell West earlier, of course, is not to just live with hope, but to be the hope. So let's hear our stories from this morning. Let's feel the timeless messages that have been gifted to us to help light our paths. Let's not be distracted by the vehicles so that we miss the possibilities. Let our hearts be open and reached, because once upon a time, it made a difference, and it can again. I'm reminded of William Barber's words, forward together, not one step back. May it be so for us as we live our hope going forward.